Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen, Brian Elke, Anthony Bellino, all joining you. Join us now, our good friend. We welcome him back to the program covering the Detroit Lions and our cousins over there, the mistake by the lake, the Cleveland Browns, for Real GM, the Lions Wire, and the Browns Wire. Our buddy Jeff Risden. Find him on Twitter, at Jeff Risden. Jeff, long time no talk. How are you? How's life? How are things? How are the kids, my friend?
It is great to be back with you. It has been. It's been too long, man. We got to do this more often. But yeah, it's going well. It's the heart of high school basketball season, so my free time is gone. It's devoted between my seventh grade daughter and my sophomore son, and watching an insane amount of football. Life's really good, bro.
Yeah, less, you know, you're watching more football on tape, you know, that you have a little bit control over, you know, time and whatnot, you know, maybe the deadline shift for you a little bit. And then all of a sudden, boom, you get two kids that are involved in sports and all of a sudden you're driving around like your hair's on fire. You're basically an Uber driver. So I don't know if you want to keep the mileage on this and just give them a bill when they hit like 25 or 26. But, oh, yeah, by the way, all those rides, all those practices, you might make a little change. I don't know.
I'm for it. I like that idea. In fact, I'm en route somewhere now as we speak, as I always am.
Yeah, exactly. That's the life of a parent. Jeff, I with this Lions team, I think that most people after the end of the season kind of all came around. Like I was a believer. I was a believer in Dan Campbell early. I was a believer in the staff. I thought that they would figure it out. They make some changes. He takes over the play calling duties, and I just kind of held fast. And you look at the last six games of this season for them to finish 3-3 like they did, it kind of feels like everybody's on the bandwagon. And I don't know if I've ever felt so much excitement about a team that only won three games the previous year.
It's really strange, isn't it? It's like, okay, they were 0-10. They were the last team to get a win. And then to go out and beat the last team that lost in Arizona and do it the way they did. You're going to get a fluke victory here or there, although that's been a tough thing for the Lions to get. You know, the ball just hasn't bounced for whatever. But when they went out and they put it to Arizona, like they were clearly the better team from the opening kickoff till the end of that game. I think that made a statement to a lot of people. A lot of people that needed some convincing that, hey, okay, that's nice. You tied Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh stinks. They're on fumes, and they proved that last weekend. Well, at that point, we weren't quite sure that Arizona was also fuming out. But boy, a win like that, and then you go out and you play the Green Bay Packers in Week 18. And yes, Aaron Rodgers didn't play in the second half. Go back to halftime. Lions won the first half when Aaron Rodgers was in the game too. That's something that, you know, that's feathers in the cap that a lot of people didn't think that Dan Campbell could get. You know, those are pelts on the wall that they didn't think he could hunt. And the quality of play, we watched the games. We saw it. The offense improved. One of the things that they talked about coming out of the bye week was that they wanted better attention to detail on offense, specifically in the passing game. Guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jamal Williams had to execute their jobs a little bit better. They were good players. And they were playing well, but they could have done better. And you know what? They did. And whether it was, you know, dumping Anthony Lynn as the play caller or getting more guys involved more often or, you know, the line stabilizing, whatever. It all came together really nicely. And this is how you build momentum by winning strong at the end of the season. They did it. They didn't do it with patchwork veterans. They did it with a lot of rookies and unheralded guys. I'm excited just talking about it right now, man. I'm ready. I'm ready for them to go back and go get it again.
We can't get to like August fast enough, can we? Like, can we get to the draft? Can that start tomorrow? That would be great. Let's get all of our picks. Let's wheel and deal a little bit. Let's load up at like 10 first rounders. Let's go. I know it's difficult. Yeah, Freddie calls in. One of our listeners calls in all the time, and he always makes fun of me. And he always asks me if how do I do the show right when I'm in my Rory mascot costume? Right, that's his big joke. He likes. And I said, look, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of Matt Patricia. I wasn't a huge fan of where the direction of the program was going under him. But there's certain things you can and can't say while the guy's the head coach and you're employed for the team, right? I walk a very fine line here. But this is something that I truly, honestly feel. And I looked at that Green Bay game. I think it was after like week 5 or 6. You know, Green Bay had got some things turned around. They figured out and they were looking good. And it was like, okay, Green Bay at the end of the season, if you're going to win a game, they might be shutting some guys down. But you mentioned that Arizona game, the way that they dominated for four quarters. And then the Minnesota game, you know, after the heartbreak that they faced on the road at Minnesota to pick up that victory. And of course, they had some clunkers. They had some duds. They had some games where they just didn't perform well, like Seattle on the road, at home against Philadelphia when they got their doors blown off. And I really think that that was like an emotional letdown after all the stops that they tried to pull against the LA Rams. But I see all of this taking place, and you could tell that everyone in the league knows that this coaching staff has a group of guys that, you know, might not be the most talented roster, but they are playing hard. And that even got a defensive coordinator of a team that had 13 losses and a tie a job interview, which, I mean, that should, if you weren't a believer, that should speak volumes to what the rest of the league feels like Detroit is doing.
Absolutely. And, you know, you look back and they won a, I think they were 11-5-1 against the spread, which tells you that they probably overachieved relative to what people expected them to do. And that's very much what they did. Now, the trick now is to get the 3 wins in actuality into the 11 wins that they got with the sports books. That's the challenge. And the reality is, and Brad Holmes brought this up in his postseason press conference, and I'm glad he said it. The reality is we are a 3-win football team. We have to get better at a lot of areas, and they do. The nice thing is, from the standpoint that we're looking at, they've got the cap room to do it. They've got assets that they can, you know, they have draft picks. They have 4 first-round draft picks in the next 2 years. And you know this from covering the draft for years. Future draft picks, those 2023 first-round picks, both their own and the Rams, are more valuable in 2022 than they are in 2023. And don't think that Brad Holmes doesn't know that either. So I'm very excited to what they can add with that, whether they're going to wind up with 2 picks in the first round, 3 picks, 4 picks, who knows. That's another thing to get excited about. They're going to add some premium talent to this team and just simply get better by adding all those guys in. They are still weeding out some of the negative things that the prior regime brought upon them. You know, the dead money. $66.2 million in contracts to guys who never played a down for the team this year. That goes away after the season. They're not going to be handicapped by that. So they're going to have a chance to get better. The challenge now is that people like me and you and everybody listening are going to expect that much to translate into wins soon. And the hope is that they can, you know, build on the momentum that they've got, add those new pieces in, and keep rolling with it, because there will be more pressure on them last year. Next year, there should not be a last place team, especially with the way that Chicago and Minnesota ended their seasons and blew up their regimes. If this is a last place team again in 2022, everything we're talking about today, when we talk a year from now, we're going to be looking for nails to pull out of the coffin, because it's not going to be pretty.
You know, Jeff, you recently had on the Detroit Lions podcast, you had a guy that we had on earlier in the week, in Jeff Nagy of the Super Bowl, and the Senior Bowl. And so Jim Nagy, the director there, he's a Michigan guy. He spent a lot of years scouting. And because of the coaching staffs that were in flux, you know, the Jets end up, Robert Saleh, local connection there. So that's cool. They get to coach one team and the Lions get to coach the other. So we talked when we had him on, we talked a lot about, you know, just like the process, the procedure, you know, developing the teams, their fellowship program, yada, yada, yada. And after you talked to him, I wanted to get your thoughts and your takeaways on what this will mean for this Detroit Lions coaching staff to get their hands on some of these players and get an opportunity to see some guys here prior to the draft.
Now, one of the big things that it does, and I'm heading down to the Senior Bowl, I'll be down there and we'll be having live daily, multiple daily reports from the Senior Bowl on the Detroit Lions podcast. Check our YouTube channel, subscribe and like it, and you'll find out when we're going on the air. Got to do my shameless plug there. Jim, this is my 13th time down, and one of the things that I've picked up every year is how well the coaching staff weeds out who I'll give Matt Patricia and his regime credit for when they coached it a couple seasons ago. They did a better job of finding out who wasn't players that they wanted more than they got players. I think the only player that they drafted was Jonah Jackson from their own team. But there were a couple of guys that I know that their scouting department really liked, and they just didn't fit with that regime. Now, in hindsight, maybe that's a plus for those players. Who knows? But it's a chance to see, okay, do they respond to the coaching style? Will they listen? Are they working? Do they have that ethic? Are they playing for themselves or are they playing for a team? This is an exhibition game, and quite frankly, the game itself doesn't mean anything. It's all about the practices, about the team interviews that they're going to get. But if there's guys who are fired up and hitting people in the game itself, you better believe that that's a Dan Campbell kind of guy. That's a kneecap fighter. That's what he wants to see. So the fact that they're going to get to spend that much time with all these prospects, and it's not just the guys that are on their own team, they're going to be going against the other guys as well. They're going to see the strengths and weaknesses of what guys on the other team bring. The Lions are coaching the American team. They're going to be going up against Saleh and the national team. It's a fantastic opportunity to just pick their brains. You know, Mark Brunell is going to get to work with Sam Howell and Malik Willis Just a chance to see if hey, is this a guy that we can work with? Is this a guy that we think we can develop into something, or no? You know, that it's such an asset for it. And I'm very excited. Jim did a great job of breaking down how, you know, you're trying to keep all the SEC guys together. You're trying to keep college teammates together. The Lions have a couple of them at wide receiver from SMU, and a tight end too, and Grant Calcaterra, who, by the way, would be a phenomenal late round pick if he passes the injury test. He's a really, really good player who would be fantastic for what the Lions need. And that's the type of thing that they can get an access to. You know, I'm really pumped about getting down there and seeing it. It's, I missed it last year. We weren't allowed to go because of COVID restrictions. I'm really looking forward to seeing this coaching staff in action with players that they haven't, you know, that they haven't worked with before, because it's a very telling way. It's one of the ways, honestly, that I knew a few years ago, when the Browns did it with Hugh Jackson, that guy is clueless, but some of his assistants are really good. And I'll go back to when Jim Schwartz did it with the Lions back in, I think it was the 2013 season or 2012 season. Chris Kocurek was the defensive line coach at that time. That guy's star as a coach rose because of how good he was in those drills. So I'm looking at like a guy like Kelvin Shepherd, the linebackers coach for the Lions. This is a guy who's not getting the attention that some of the other coaches are. He's a really good coach. He's going up places, and this is the place where he can prove that he can start to do that.
Well, hopefully the only place he's going up is the seventh floor of Ford Field, not going anywhere else. I mean, hang on to all these guys, right? You start having a little success, all of a sudden everybody wants to poach your guys. Speaking of, like, you know, scouting and, you know, the general manager and the head coach, and you got to feel sort of good, right, about Brad Holmes and what he was able to do, especially when you look at some of the undrafted rookie finds and guys who got some run last year, like A.J. Parker, Jerry Jacobs, who you spoke to recently, Tommy Kramer, Brock Wright. Like, there were some guys that got on the field that made some immediate impacts that were like, okay, where did you find these guys? When you look at the draft class that they assembled last year, along with the undrafted rookie finds that Brad Holmes and company had, where's your confidence level on a scale of like 1 to 5, 5 through the roof, 1 in the basement? Where's your confidence level with this management group with Brad Holmes at the helm, you know, moving forward? Are they going to knock this draft out of the park? Like, how do you feel? Because I'm trying to restrain myself right now because I'm overly confident, I think.
Okay, I will rain a little on your parade, but there are umbrellas out there. Levi Onwuzurike does not look good as a number, number 34 overall, 35 overall pick. And when Brad Holmes comes out before the season starts and says, we wanted to trade up into the first round to get this guy. Okay, I know he played hurt. I know he hadn't played football in a long time, but that's not looking so good. And his eye for quarterbacks is something that we have to question. Now, Jared Goff, I feel a lot better about Jared Goff now than I did in October. The way he finished, the way that the offense moved in his direction, once they picked up receiving talent that he trusted, I think he got a lot better. But he brought in Tim Boyle and, like, paid a lot of money to get Tim Boyle over some other guys. And like, Boyle had – he got better, but that's not an NFL quarterback. And so I'm concerned about that. But, yeah, overwhelming hits. Getting Aleem McNeil when they did, great pick, underappreciated pick. That guy's going to be really, really good for a long time. He and Penei Sewell were two of the four youngest players in the NFL. They both made the all-rookie team from Pro Football Focus, and they earned it. So I'm pretty excited about that. Finding the guys like Jerry Jacobs, A.J. Parker, Tommy Kramer, Brock Wright, even guys like Tavante Beckett. These guys have NFL futures, and one of the things that I'm really encouraged about was the fact that they played these guys. They didn't do what the Houston Texans did or what the Chicago Bears did. When a regular veteran starter got injured, they went for another veteran. They didn't play their young guys. That's going to hurt them in the long term. Like, I'm pretty close to the Texans team. I used to cover that team. I used to live in Houston. They're not going to be better next year than they are this year. Or if they are, it's going to be marginally better, and only because Deshaun Watson situation got resolved in a way that's favorable for them to get a lot for him. But they plugged in Danny Amendola. They were signing veterans off the street instead of playing their young guys. That didn't help them for 2022, 2023. The Lions, they found out Jerry Jacobs can play. That guy can play. A.J. Parker, he's going to be their starting slot corner. And you know what? I feel pretty good about that. That's the opportunity that I'm so grateful for. And it's something we're going to watch a team this weekend in the Cincinnati Bengals who did that a couple of years ago. Instead of plugging holes with veterans, you know, stopgap guys, they played some of their youngsters. They took some lumps, but they learned and they got better. And I think if you tell Lions fans right now that when we're talking this time next year that they're going to be where the Cincinnati Bengals are, I think we'll all take that.
Yeah, no doubt. That was going to be one of my questions on the docket, and you brought up quarterbacks, and it's like Jared Goff. Okay, like do we ride it out with him, or is there a quarterback in your perfect draft scenario? Do they try to find one in maybe the third or fourth round? You know how we always overvalue quarterbacks at that position in the draft. You know, nobody's thrown a pass in 2 months, but all of a sudden he's the second coming of Christ. Mel Kiper's shooting up the draft boards right now as we speak. I'm sure somebody's rising and somebody's falling, even though nobody's played a game since December. It just is what it is. And it happens every year. Where do you think do the Lions address quarterback in this year's class? I mean, if Desmond Ridder or somebody falls to him, then I guess how do you not take him if it's in the third round? But what's your strategy there for the man under center?
I am still not sold with Jared Goff as a long-term solution. And I don't know if Brad Holmes and the brain trust in Detroit shares it. I know they want him to be, but I do think that he raised enough. See, that's the thing. Like, if you would have asked me this in October, I'm like, oh, heck yeah, we have to get a quarterback. Goff isn't it. The way he finished the season, he was really, really good the last six games that he played in. There's no doubt about it. I'm raising my hand. I was a skeptic of Goff. He showed me a lot more than I thought he could do with the group that was surrounding him. So he will be the quarterback in 2022. The question is, did he do enough to earn it in 2023? I don't think so yet. If you see a guy that you really like, if it's Sam Howell from North Carolina, who's going to be one of the guys they have to see, if it's Bailey Zappe, the other guy that they have from Western Kentucky, Michigan State fans know him pretty well. That guy threw it all over Spartan State. There's something there with him. He's a third, fourth round talent that they're going to be able to coach up. If you can get a guy like that who needs a year or two to adjust to just playing with bigger and better players around him, I think you do it. But I don't think you can force it. But at the same time, if you're worried about, like, oh, next year's class looks good, we got two first-round picks. Like, at this time last year, who was the number one pick for this coming draft at this point last year? Spencer Rattler,
yeah.
Spencer Rattler might not even start at South Carolina next year after he couldn't hack it at Oklahoma. Things change very quickly on that. Be very wary about, oh, we can get C.J. Stroud. We can get Bryce Young. We can get the kid from Boston College who's underappreciated and was would have been very good in this draft. But he got hurt, and I can't think of his name. It's bugging me. Be very wary about, like, oh, we can get it next year. Next year might not be any better. So if you like a guy this class, if you like Howell, if you like Matt Corral, if you like Kenny Pickett on the other side of the ball from the Senior Bowl, don't hesitate. Go do it. The one thing that I like, this is a regime that has a history. All the guys who are involved from John Dorsey, from Chris Spielman, from Dan Campbell and all the Saints guys that they have to the Brad Holmes and Ray Agnew from the Rams. They have always been aggressive, all of those guys, in getting the quarterbacks that they want, whether it was, getting Baker Mayfield, trading up to get Jared Goff at number one, maneuvering to get Patrick Mahomes in the draft. If they see someone they like, they're not going to be shy about pouncing on it. So we will learn very quickly how they feel about Goff and also how they feel about this draft class.
He is Jeff Risden. Find him on Twitter. Follow him if you're a Lions fan, at Jeff Risden. Find his work at Real GM, the Lions Wire, and the co-host of the Detroit Lions podcast as well. Like he said, click like, subscribe, do all that good stuff. Jeff, my friend, as always, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for your time today, my man. Enjoy the weekend and enjoy the playoffs.
I will do it. I got the Bengals and the Bills winning this weekend. Those are the only picks that I've got solid so far.
Oh, the AFC side of the bracket. There you go. Hey, put your money down now. Charge Jeff later.